The Brahmin said, "Neither Sankarshan, Vasudev, Prajumna, the best of bowmen, nor the unequaled warrior Aniruddha could save my sons. Then why do you naively attempt a feat that the almighty lords of the universe could not perform? We cannot take you seriously." Sri Arjuna said, "I am neither Lord Sankarshan, O Brahmin, nor Lord Krishna, nor even Krishna's son. Rather, I am Arjuna, wielder of the Gandiva bow. Do not minimize my ability, which was good enough to satisfy Lord Shiva. I will bring back your sons, dear master, even if I have to defeat death himself in battle." Thus convinced by Arjuna, the Brahmin went home, satisfied by having heard Arjuna's declaration of his prowess. When the wife of the elevated Brahmin was again about to give birth, he went to Arjuna in great anxiety and begged him, "Please, please protect my child from death." After touching pure water, offering obeisances to Lord Shiva, and recollecting the mantras for his celestial weapons, Arjuna strung his bow Gandiva. Arjuna fenced in the house where the birth was taking place by shooting arrows attached to various missiles. Thus the son of Prita constructed a protective cage of arrows, covering the house upwards, downwards, and sideways. The Brahmin's wife then gave birth, but after the newborn infant had been crying for a short time, he suddenly vanished into the sky in his selfsame body. The Brahmin then derided Arjuna in front of Lord Krishna. "Just see how foolish I was to put my faith in the bragging of a eunuch. When neither Prajumna, Aniruddha, Rama, nor Keshava can save a person, who else can possibly protect him? To hell with that liar Arjuna! To hell with that braggart's bow! He is so foolish that he has deluded himself into thinking he can bring back a person whom destiny himself has taken away." While the wise Brahmin continued to heap insults upon him, Arjuna employed a mystic incantation to go at once to Sangyamani, the city of heaven where Lord Yamaraj resides. Not seeing the Brahmin's child there, Arjuna went to the cities of Agni, Niriti, Soma, Vayu, and Varuna. With weapons at the ready, he searched through all the domains of the universe, from the bottom of the subterranean region to the roof of heaven. Finally, not having found the Brahmin's son anywhere, Arjuna decided to enter the sacred fire, having failed to keep his promise. But just as he was about to do so, Lord Krishna stopped him and spoke the following words, "I will show you the Brahmin's sons, so please don't despise yourself like this. These same men who now criticize us will soon establish our spotless fame." Having thus advised Arjuna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead had Arjuna join him on his divine chariot and set off toward the west. The Lord's chariot passed over the seven islands of the middle universe, each with its ocean and its seven principal mountains. Then it crossed the Loka-Loka boundary and entered the vast region of total darkness. In that darkness, the chariot's horses, Shaibya, Sugriva, Meghapushpa, and Valahaka, lost their way. Seeing them in this condition, Lord Krishna, the supreme master of all masters of yoga, sent his Sudarshan disc before the chariot. That disc shone like thousands of suns. The Sudarshan disc penetrated the darkness with its blazing effulgence. Racing forward with the speed of the mind, it cut through the fearsome dense oblivion expanded from primeval matter, as an arrow shot from Lord Ram's bow cuts through his enemy's army. Following the Sudarshan disc, the chariot went beyond the darkness and reached the endless spiritual light of the all-pervasive Brahma-jyoti. As Arjuna beheld this glaring effulgence, his eyes hurt, and so he shut them. From that region they entered a body of water resplendent with huge waves being churned by a mighty wind. Within that ocean, Arjuna saw an amazing palace more radiant than anything he had ever seen before. Its beauty was enhanced by thousands of ornamental pillars bedecked with brilliant gems. In that palace was the huge, awe-inspiring serpent Anantashesh. He shone brilliantly with the radiance emanating from the gems on his thousands of hoods and reflecting from twice as many fearsome eyes. He resembled white Mount Kailas, and his necks and tongues were dark blue. Arjuna then saw the omnipresent and omnipotent Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mahavishnu, sitting at ease on the serpent bed. His bluish complexion was the color of a dense rain cloud. He wore a beautiful yellow garment. His face looked charming. His broad eyes were most attractive, and he had eight long, handsome arms. His profuse locks of hair were bathed on all sides in the brilliance reflecting from the clusters of precious jewels decorating his crown and earrings. He wore the Kaustubha gem, the mark of Shivats, and a garland of forest flowers. Serving that topmost of all lords were his personal attendants, headed by Sunanda and Nanda, his chakra and other weapons in their personified forms, his consort potencies Pushti, Shri, Kirti, and Aja, and all his various mystic powers. Lord Krishna offered homage to himself in this boundless form, and Arjuna, astonished at the sight of Lord Mahavishnu, bowed down as well. Then, as the two of them stood before him with joined palms, the almighty Mahavishnu, supreme master of all rulers of the universe, smiled and spoke to them in a voice full of solemn authority. I brought the Brahmin sons here because I wanted to see the two of you, my expansions, who have descended to the earth to save the principles of religion. As soon as you finish killing the demons who burden the earth, quickly come back here to me. Although all your desires are completely fulfilled, O best of exalted personalities, for the benefit of the people in general, you should continue to exemplify religious behavior as the sages Nara and Narayan. Thus instructed by the Supreme Lord of the topmost planet, Krishna and Arjuna assented by chanting Om, and then they bow down to Almighty Lord Mahavishnu. Taking the Brahmin sons with them, they returned with great delight to Dwaraka by the same path along which they had come. Then they presented the Brahmin with his sons, who were in the same infant bodies in which they had been lost. Having seen the domain of Lord Vishnu, Arjuna was totally amazed. He concluded that whatever extraordinary power a person exhibits can only be a manifestation of Sri Krishna's mercy. Lord Krishna exhibited many other similar heroic pastimes in this world. He apparently enjoyed the pleasures of ordinary human life, and he performed greatly potent fire sacrifices. The Lord, having demonstrated his supremacy, at suitable times he showered down all desirable things upon the Brahmins and his other subjects, just as Indra pours down his rain. Now that he had killed many wicked kings and engaged devotees such as Arjuna in killing others, the Lord could easily assure the execution of religious principles through the agency of such pious rulers as Yudhishthira. Chapter 90, Summary of Lord Krishna's Glories. Shukadev Goswami said, "The master of the goddess of fortune resided happily in his capital city, Dwaraka, which was endowed with all opulences and populated by the most eminent Vrishnis and their gorgeously dressed wives. When these beautiful women in the bloom of youth would play on the city's rooftops with balls and other toys, they shone like flashing lightning. The main streets of the city were always crowded with intoxicated elephants exuding mada, and also with cavalry, richly adorned infantrymen, and soldiers riding chariots brilliantly decorated with gold. Gracing the city were many gardens and parks with rows of flowering trees, where bees and birds would gather, filling all directions with their songs. Lord Krishna was the sole beloved of his 16,000 wives. Expanding himself into that many forms, he enjoyed with each of his queens in her own richly furnished residence. On the grounds of these palaces were clear ponds fragrant with the pollen of blooming Utpala, Kalara, Kumuda, and Amboja lotuses, and filled with flocks of cooing birds. The Almighty Lord would enter these ponds, and also various rivers, and enjoy sporting in the water while his wives embraced him, leaving the red kumkum from their breasts smeared on his body. As Gandharvas joyfully sang his praises to the accompaniment of Mridanga, Panava, and Anika drums, and as professional reciters known as Sutas, Magadas, and Bandis played Veenas and recited poems praising him, Lord Krishna would play with his wives in the water. Laughing, the queens would squirt water on him with syringes, and he would squirt them back. Thus Krishna would sport with his queens in the same way that the Lord of the Yakshas sports with the Yakshi nymphs. Under the drenched clothing of the queens, their thighs and breasts would become visible. The flowers tied in their large braids would scatter as they sprayed water on their consort, and on the plea of trying to take away his syringe, they would embrace him. By his touch, their lusty feelings would increase, causing their faces to beam with smiles. Thus, Lord Krishna's queens shone with resplendent beauty. Lord Krishna's flower garland would become smeared with kumkum from their breasts, and his abundant locks of hair would become disheveled as a result of his absorption in the game. As the Lord repeatedly sprayed his young consorts and they sprayed him in turn, he enjoyed himself like the king of the elephants, enjoying in the company of his bevy of she-elephants. Afterward, Lord Krishna and his wives would give the ornaments and clothing they had worn during their water sports to the male and female performers, who earned their livelihood from singing and from playing instrumental music. In this way, Lord Krishna would sport with his queens, totally captivating their hearts with his gestures, talks, glances, and smiles, and also with his jokes, playful exchanges, and embraces. The queens would become stunned in ecstatic trance, their minds absorbed in Krishna alone. Then, thinking of their lotus-eyed Lord, they would speak as if insane. Please hear these words from me as I relate them. Mahisha Uchu Kurudi Vilapasitvam Vita Nindrana Sheshe Sopati Jagati Ratyam Isharo Gupta Bodha Vayimi Vasaki Kachil Gada Nirvidha Cheta Nalana Nayana Haso Dada Lilek Shitena Netre Nimili Yasinaktam Adrishta Bandhus Dhamro Ravishikadunam Bata Chakravaki Dasyam Gatavayami Vachuta Parajishtam King Vasajan Sahayase Kabavena Vodhum Bo Bosada Nishtanase Hudanvan Alabna Nindro Dikata Prajagara King Vamukunda Paditat Malanchana Praptang Risham Tham Chakato Duratyayam. The queen said, O Kurari bird, you are lamenting. Now it is night, and somewhere in this world the Supreme Lord is asleep in a hidden place. But you are wide awake, O friend, unable to fall asleep. Is it that, like us, you have had your heart pierced to the core by the lotus-eyed Lord's munificent, playful, smiling glances? Poor Chakravaki, even after closing your eyes, you continue to cry pitifully through the night for your unseen mate. Or is it that, like us, you have become the servant of Achyuta and hankered to wear in your braided hair the garland he has blessed with the touch of his feet? Dear ocean, you are always roaring, not sleeping at night. Are you suffering insomnia? Or is it that, as with us, Mukunda has taken your insignias and you are hopeless of retrieving them? My dear moon, having contracted a severe case of tuberculosis, you have become so emaciated that you fail to dispel the darkness with your rays. Or is it that you appear dumbstruck because, like us, you cannot remember the encouraging promises Mukunda once made to you? O Malayan breeze, what have we done to displease you so that you stir up lust in our hearts, which have already been shattered by Govinda's sidelong glances? O revered cloud, you are indeed very dear to the chief of the Yadavas who bears the mark of Shivats. Like us, you are bound to him by love and are meditating upon him. Your heart is distraught with great eagerness, as our hearts are, and as you remember him again and again, you shed a torrent of tears. Association with Krishna brings such misery. O sweet-throated cuckoo, in a voice that could revive the dead, you are vibrating the same sounds we once heard from our beloved, the most pleasing of speakers. Please tell me what I can do today to please you. O magnanimous mountain, you neither move nor speak. You must be pondering some matter of great importance. Or do you, like us, desire to hold on your breasts the feet of Vasudev's darling son? O rivers, wives of the ocean, your pools have now dried up. Alas, you have shriveled to nothing, and your wealth of lotuses has vanished. Are you, then, like us, who are withering away because of not receiving the affectionate glance of our dear husband, the Lord of Madhu, who has cheated our hearts? Welcome, swan. Please sit here and drink some milk. Give us some news of the descendant of Shura, dear one. We know you are his messenger. Is that invincible lord doing well? And does that unreliable friend of ours still remember the words he spoke to us long ago? Why should we go and worship him? O servant of a petty master, go tell him who fulfills our desires to come here without the goddess of fortune. Is she the only woman exclusively devoted to him? Shukadev Goswami said, by thus speaking and acting with such ecstatic love for Lord Krishna, the master of all masters of mystic yoga, his loving wives attain the ultimate goal of life. The Lord, whom countless songs glorify in countless ways, forcibly attracts the minds of all women who simply hear about him. What to speak, then, of those women who see him directly? And how could one possibly describe the great austerities that had been performed by the women who perfectly served him, the spiritual master of the universe, in pure ecstatic love? Thinking of him as their husband, they rendered such intimate services as massaging his feet. Thus, observing the principles of duty enunciated in the Vedas, Lord Krishna, the goal of the saintly devotees, repeatedly demonstrated how one can achieve at home the objectives of religiosity, economic development, and regulated sense gratification. While fulfilling the highest standards of religious householder life, Lord Krishna maintained more than 16,100 wives. Among these jewel-like women were eight principal queens, headed by Rukmini. I have already described them one after another, O King, along with their sons. The Supreme Lord Krishna, whose endeavor never fails, begot 10 sons in each of his many wives. Among these sons, all possessing unlimited valor, 18 were Maharatas of great renown. Now hear their names from me. They were Pradyumna, Aniruddha, Deeptiman, Banu, Samba, Madhu, Brihadbhanu, Chitrabhanu, Vrika, Aruna, Pushkar, Vedabahu, Shutadev, Sunandana, Chitrabahu, Virupa, Kavi, and Yagrodha. O best of kings, of these sons begotten by Lord Krishna, the enemy of Madhu, the most prominent was Rukmini's son Pradyumna. He was just like his father. The great warrior Pradyumna married Rukmi's daughter, Rukmavati, who gave birth to Aniruddha. He was as strong as 10,000 elephants. Rukmi's daughter's son, Aniruddha, married Rukmi's son's daughter, Rochana. From her was born Vajra, who would remain among the few survivors of the Yadu's battle with clubs. From Vajra came Pratibahu, whose son was Subahu. Subahu's son was Shantasen, from whom Shatasen was born. No one born in this family was poor in wealth or progeny, short-lived, weak, or neglectful of Brahminical culture. The Yadu dynasty produced innumerable great men of famous deeds. Even in tens of thousands of years, O King, one could never count them all. I have heard from authoritative sources that the Yadu family employed 38,800,000 teachers just to educate their children. Who can count all the great Yadavas, when among them King Ugrasen alone was accompanied by an entourage of 30 trillion attendants? The savage descendants of Diti, who had been killed in past ages in battles between the demigods and the demons, took birth among the human beings and arrogantly harassed the general populace. To subdue these demons, Lord Hari told the demigods to descend into the dynasty of Yadu. They comprised 101 clans, O King. Because Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Yadavas accepted him as their ultimate authority, and among them, all those who were his intimate associates especially flourished. The Vrishnis were so absorbed in Krishna consciousness that they forgot their own bodies while sleeping, sitting, walking, conversing, playing, bathing, and so on.
Tirtam chakre niponam yadjana yadushu saksarit parashocham vinvit snigda sorupam yajirajita parashvi yaratinya yatna yannama mangalagnam shutamata gaditam yatkrito gotra dharma krishnasyaitam chitram chitibadhadanam kala chakrayudhasya.
The heavenly Ganges is a holy place of pilgrimage because her waters wash Lord Krishna's feet. But when the Lord descended among the Yadus, his glories eclipsed the Ganges as a holy place. Both those who hated Krishna and those who loved him attained eternal forms like his in the spiritual world. The unattainable and supremely self-satisfied goddess of fortune, for the sake of whose favor everyone else struggles, belongs to him alone. His name destroys all inauspiciousness when heard or chanted. He alone has set forth the principles of the various disciplic successions of sages. What wonder is it that he, whose personal weapon is the wheel of time, relieve the burden of the earth?
Jayati jananivaso devaki janmavado yodavada parishat svardorbhirasyanna dharmam sthirachadavijanagnak susmitashi mukhena Vajapodamanitanam Vardhayan Kamadevam.
Lord Sri Krishna is he who is known as Jananivas, the ultimate resort of all living entities. and who is also known as Devaki Nandana or Yashoda Nandana, the son of Devaki and Yashoda. He is the guide of the Yadu dynasty, and with his mighty arms he kills everything inauspicious, as well as every man who is impious. By his presence he destroys all things inauspicious for all living entities, moving and inert. His blissful smiling face always increases the lusty desires of the gopis of Vrindavan. May he be all glorious and happy.
Ittam barasya nijavatma narikshayata lilatanostadanurupa vidambanani karmani karma kashanani yaduttamasya shuyara mushyapadayodanu vrittimicham.
To protect the principles of devotional service to himself, Lord Krishna, the best of the Yadus, accepts the pastime forms that have been glorified here in the Srimad Bhagavatam. One who desires to faithfully serve his lotus feet should hear of the activities he performs in each of these incarnations, activities that suitably imitate those of the forms he assumes. Hearing narrations of these pastimes destroys the reactions to fruitive work.
Martyastayanu savamedadayamakunda shimatkatashavanakirtana chindayati dandamadustadakutantajavapavargam gramadvanam chitipajopiyayuyadarta.
By regularly hearing, chanting, and meditating on the beautiful topics of Lord Mukunda with ever-increasing sincerity, a mortal being will attain the divine kingdom of the Lord, where the inviolable power of death holds no sway. For this purpose, many persons, including great kings, abandoned their mundane homes and took to the forest. Thus ends the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam.